Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The Homance Chronicles.
The female equivalent of a bromance.
So many poor choices.
But so many good takes.
But so many poor choices.
This is the Homance Chronicles, and I'm Sarah.
And I'm Nicole.
I got so excited about telling y'all about our hoe this week that I forgot that we started recording. Here we go.
Yep, sure did.
And Nicole's just staring at me. Are you gonna do it or no?
Are you gonna, like, well, hopefully she remembers to cut out this beginning.
No, we're gonna keep it in. We're gonna make him suffer. Just kidding. Okay. So we are back with another hoe of history this week, and it's gonna have to be a two-parter, y'all. This lady had she had quite the life, and the fact that she is from like the early 1800s, it's so awesome to have all this information on her. So.
All right. Well, me and Sir William are strapped in.
Oh, God.
And knocking mics over.
Actually, that did not make a lot of noise, but it was funnier than it sounded.
Oh, boy.
For those of you who have no idea what's going on, Sir William is sitting in her lap and he is thrashing wildly his head back and forth because he wants her to just hold him deeply.
Yeah, he missed me. I was on vacation and he was being watched by basically two different neighbors, daytime and nighttime duties. And when I came home today, I actually was like, is he recognize me? Like, I felt like it took a minute for him to remember who I was. And then now he's been suction cupped to me ever since he figured
out. Oh, my
gosh.
Yeah. He was like, oh, no, I know you. I know you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's adorable, though.
Mm-hmm.
I hope his adoption comes soon because he does need a good forever home. So if anybody is interested, holler at Nicole. Okay. I hope we're ready for our hoe because I sure am. I even spent time on this, like, not today, like over the weekend. And I was like, this, we have to do two parts on this woman. It's crazy. Okay. So our hoe this and next week is Emma Goldman. And she was born in June of 1869, and she passed away in 1940. So she had a fairly good long life. She is from what is now Lithuania. It's Kovno, Russia. Kovno government, governorate, Russian Empire to Orthodox. She was, yeah. So that was like before the Tsar was done type shit, like early in the Russian times. So she was born to a Lithuanian Jewish family. They were Orthodox. And usually we don't go far into like the moms and dads on this, but I feel really important on this one because it really, I can't stop watching him. And then I've got August in my lap who won't let me live my life either. So
I know. Sir William does this thing where I call it air swimming. He looks like he's swimming, but he's clearly not in water. So,
really? I would call that more like a claps his little paws to the, you know, up top and then brings him down. It's hilarious.
Does. Yep. There he goes.
Oh, there he goes. Anyway. Okay. So, usually we don't go into the parents, but I felt like this one, it was because she had a lot of commentary on a lot of her life. So, she injected a lot of her thoughts and the stuff that happened when she was younger, and they were recorded. So here we go. So her mother, she had two children for their first husband, but he actually ended up passing away from tuberculosis, and she was completely fucking devastated. Like, so much so that her parents actually arranged a second marriage for her. And Emma says, whatever love she had died with a young man to whom she had been married at the age of 15. So at 15 years old, she was married, and she was so deeply, deeply in love with this man. They had two children, and then he passed away. And then she had to get another, she was like in an arranged marriage. So apparently, Emma says, it was mismated from the start. Her father, Abraham Goldman, who is a fucking scumbag, invested her mother's inheritance into a business that quickly failed. Pattern emerging. Not like our typical pattern. Worse. So after that, they had little to no money and little to no emotional connection. Well, no emotional connection at all. So the parents were like, we don't like each other, but we're making this work. It's for the kids. So it made home life incredibly tense for everybody. And so this is when Emma was born, of course. And then when her mother got pregnant with Emma, her dad hoped that she would be a boy, because if she were to be a female, that would mean he was a failure. She was the first and only girl of four children. So he did, in fact, have his three boys afterwards. Her dad would beat them all the fucking time, especially her, because she was the most rebellious. And I think it's because she was the first. He had some issues with her being a female. And her mother literally made no attempt for this man to stop or help her kids feel better or safe. And she would rarely even get involved in what was going on. So later, Emma speculated that it was her father's temper to sexual frustrations, which, yes, probably.
That's odd.
Yeah. I mean, so like, as the story evolves, I'm going to tell you a lot about like what she went through, and like her, the way she interjects into these stories is like, I can't wait to get the whole out. But anyway, so she had two older half sisters, and they were actually around. The eldest, her name was Helena. She was like the motherly of basically everybody in the family. So she provided the comfort like that her real mother lacked. But the second was a total fucking bitch. And then her younger brother, the first of the boys, passed away when he was sick. So, minor tragedy. I don't really know what happened. So then the family moved into a village where her pop ran an inn, and she felt a little tingle for a little servant named Petrushka. So like, she wasn't that old when she recognized that she was feeling a little tingle for him. She also witnessed at this time a peasant getting whipped with one of those, like, you know, it's a stick and it's got the five things at the end of it. So it's like one of those weird whips, like inflicts more pain. And it literally changed her life and contributed to her lifelong distaste for violent authority. Dun, dun, dun. I wrote that too. So when she was seven, yes, after the little tingle happened. So like, she was seven, younger than seven, and she's already feeling away from some boys. My goodness, Emma. The family moved to the Prussian city of Königsberg, which was also part of the Russian Empire, and it was she was enrolled in Reschule, which was like a secondary school. She had a teacher that would beat the kid ruler, and she even was lucky enough to get a male teacher that liked to molest the young girls. She managed to get him fired, and that was like her first little victory. She had befriended one of the other.
It's like Sir William's clapping for the victory.
Yeah. And so like, she ended up befriending an older person in the school system that would listen to her. And so that was like the one bright spot when she was really young. She also was accepted into the gymnasium, which is like a prep school in that area in that time. So like, I believe like Austria, anything I feel like the Russian Empire kind of covered gymnasiums at some point. Yeah. But so everybody basically gave her like the go ahead, but her religious teacher wouldn't give her a certificate of good behavior, so she couldn't attend. So like she wasn't necessarily full on against religion, but she was eventually an anarchist. So I don't feel though as though she had any kind of religious anything inklings at all, not even at home, because she was Jewish. I don't think they practiced it that much. So I don't know if her religion teacher was Jew or not, but yeah. So again, this is like early 1800s. So again, her dad was a total fucking slub. He took them to the Russian capital of St. Petersburg, where he had one store after another fail. He would open a store and it would fail. Open something up and it would fail. So eventually the kids all had to go to work. So as a teenager, Goldman begged her asshole dad to let her return to school. And in response to this, she threw her French book into the fire and shouted, "Girls do not have to learn much. All a Jewish daughter needs how to prepare glut fish, cut noodles fine, and give a man plenty of children." What an awesome guy.
All right.
Yep. So in spite of that, she did keep up on her own education, and she eventually read the book What Is to Be Done, published in 1863, about a young woman who adopts a nihilist philosophy, escapes her shitty family to live freely, and organizes a sewing cooperative. This is something that continued to inspire her throughout her life while she was dreaming, or what she was like, you know, going through it. She was dreaming of escape, and her dad was just insisting on her having a domesticated future, and she was just not having it. He tried to arrange for her to be married at the scene, and she obviously was like, "You can get fucked. I'm not doing that." She probably didn't say that though, of course. They continuously fought about it, and he actually complained that she was becoming a loose woman. Like at 15 years old, she was a loose woman.
Oh, wow.
And so she was like, "You can keep saying this, but I'm only going to marry for love." So while they moved to this new city and they started having to go to work, she ended up finding a job at a corset shop. And I'm sure you can imagine that the clientele in that shop were definitely women, but also gross, creepy men. And she was working there. She would have to fend off like the super gross cops and stalkers, like police officers. But again, this is in Russia and the Russian Empire, so it's not like, I mean, let's be honest, it'd be the same fucking anywhere. Still is. Who am I trying to kid? So at one point she was taken back to a hotel room for what she called a violent contract that forever soured her intentions with men. So I'm pretty sure she got raped aggressively. Yeah. And I have to assume, based on what I read, was that she was essentially like coaxed into the situation, like super lied to, and she was expecting something different than what actually happened. And she said to the effect of like, "How could a contract be between two humans be such a violent act? I can't imagine, you know, this being okay." So while she continued to call it a violent contract, a lot of historians, biographers say she was raped.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, what was the...
Oh.
Well, I guess before you move on, it's like... Mm-hmm. So she's coaxed into a room with this man somehow. And what was going to be her payoff? Like, for a contract, it seems like you've got two sides, or she was supposed to get something out of it. But maybe it's just the language that she uses. I don't know.
Well, that could be it too, like a translation issue. Okay. So, yes. Cut to 1885. Her eldest, the one that was like the mother figure, Helena, She was planning to move to New York, where her other shitty sister was already living with her husband. Emma wanted to go really fucking bad, and her dad just absolutely refused. Even when the eldest sister was willing to pay for everything, he was like, absolutely not, it's not happening. So Emma finally said she would throw herself into the fucking river if she couldn't go. And I have to assume the river that she was describing was like big, torrential, terrifying, could take her out. So finally, this man showed a semblance of empathy and relented. So in December, on December 29th, 1885, fun fact, they made it before Ellis Island.
Oh.
It wasn't a fucking place just yet. They missed it by like 7 years. So they made it to New York City's Castle Garden, which was the then entry for immigrants. They made eventually their way up to Rochester, New York. So northern, North New York, upper New York, with her sister, her shitty sister, and the shitty sister husband. Like a year later, as things politically were starting to change in Russia, and anti-Semitism was becoming very popular, her family, parents, and brothers came escaping everything. So everybody's now in America. Everybody's now in the same house in America. In upstate New York. Yeah. So, yeah, lots of people in one place. She ended up finding herself a job as a seamstress in like a factory setting, sewing overcoats for more than 10 hours a day, earning only $2.50 a week. She was denied when she was denied when she asked for a raise. Bro, that was only $75 a week. 75 in today's
Wow. Month.
So she quit, went to a smaller shop, and that's where she met one of the first people that kind of changed her life, Jacob Kirshner. They had a love for books, travel, and dancing. They also had a lot of lot in common with how much they detested monotony and like factory work, and just how they weren't treated very well. So they got married 4 months after they met. In 1887. He then immediately moved in with her family. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, gosh. Is it spelled K-U-S-H-N-E-R, Kushner?
It could be. I think it's either that or K-E-R-S-H.
Oh, because I'm like, well, you know, Jared Kushner.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
In today's time, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I was like, somebody famous. I wonder if this
Well, the Jared Kushner was senior advisor to Donald Trump when he was president.
Right. So,
is this the same family?
It could be. So yeah, they got married after 4 months. Then he moved in with her family in the house. On their wedding night, she discovered he was impotent. Immediately after that, the emotional and physical distance continued to grow. Eventually, she became so invested in the political turmoil that was happening around her, he started to become jealous and suspicious and even threatened suicide. She left him after that. They divorced a year later. However, when he was threatening to kill himself, he threatened to poison himself if she didn't return. She did actually return, but after 3 months, she left again. After that, her parents considered her behavior loose. There's that word again. And she was not welcomed back into the home. So she was left carrying her sewing machine in one hand, and $5 in a bag in the other. And that was that. She left. Enter New York City.
Wow.
Insane. I can't imagine leaving
the irony is that she bucks. Well, but the irony is that she left Russia or old Lithuania to get away from them, and then they followed her, and she can't get away from them until now they're telling her to go away,
right,
forcing her to be homeless.
Like shitty fucking people. Like, see how important her home life is, and the fact that
that's awful. She's like, all I wanted was to be away from you, and then you followed me here.
Wanted to have an education and be away from you fucking people, and here we are. I need to leave. So, hello, New York City. On her first day, she was at Saks Cafe, where all the radicals were hanging out. Remember, she was getting into the politicking and everything, and she was really not driving with how everything was going on in the factory scene. She didn't like capitalism and saw that people were very much being taken advantage of. So she fit into the scene really, really well because these people were radicals just like her. You know, anarchists. Mm-hmm. She was introduced to Alexander Berkman, who was one of the men who would absolutely change her life for the rest of it. He invited her to a speech to hear a guy named Johann Most. He was the editor of the radical publication called Freiheit at the time. So basically what would happen is they would have these like propaganda publications. And if you were like of like-minded, then you would get basically employed at the propaganda paper. And so he also was an advocate of propaganda of the dead, which was a group of people against the use of violence to instigate change, which I feel like it's pretty cool. I can dig that. I'd join it. So he did a speech and she was so impressed. And so he actually ended up, they met each other and he took her under his wing, trained her to speak in public, and was insisting as they were going through it that she take my place when I'm gone. One of her, actually her first public speech was back in Rochester where her family was. So she convinced her sister not to say anything so they wouldn't show up and find out, you know what I mean? She got up on stage and it was like old school. She completely fucking blacked out. Her brain went blank. She said while she was on stage, her life in New York City flashed before her eyes and the words came without hesitation. She essentially let the words flow from her face. I'm hilarious. And she blacked out, started speaking words of truth from her own experiences, and felt super empowered by this and really felt like she had a purpose now. So she traveled and started speaking in different areas and cities and places this word of Johann Most and his publication Freiheit. While she was traveling, though, she became really tired of being like the mouthpiece for this guy and it was like not interested in how very controlling he was. Like, she would want to interject her own stuff into these speeches and he was like, absolutely not, you have to go by my word. And she was like, no, I'm done. So then she left and went to a publication called The D-Anatomy. All good friends with Mr. Alexander Berkman, who she referred to lovingly as Sasha. Okay. She and Sasha moved into a communal apartment after becoming lovers. They lived with his cousin, modest Frieda Stein, who was important in the anarchist, what is it called? Anarchist groups or whatever. And they moved into an apartment, like I said, a communal apartment with them. In 1892, Goldman, Berkman, and Stein joined forces and opened an ice cream shop in Worcester, Mass.
It sounds like an attorney's office, not an ice cream shop.
Right. And like, oh, ice cream shop. But then a few months after operating a shop, they elected to participate in the homestead strike situation that was in Pittsburgh. Okay. Now, homestead strike, was pure fuckery. It happened in June of 1892. A guy named Andrew Carnegie and his company, Carnegie Steel Company, were trying to strike a deal with the union. Strike a union deal with the Amalgamated Association of Iron Workers. So, you know, the big, long, fancy word for this is a group of people who are for the workers and this is a group of people who are not for the workers. The factory manager, Henry Clark Frick, absolutely despised the unions. He thought they were a bunch of crybaby titty babies. Absolutely not. I'm not going to give you guys any concessions. Fuck you, basically. So because of him, they couldn't reach any agreements for like workers' rights. So he locked the factors out, brought new factory workers in who didn't care because they hadn't been there. They just needed jobs, and hired 300 Pinkerton security guards to guard these men while they worked, while the people that were supposed to be factory workers looking to get human rights essentially were being told, get fucked, you're not coming back. So
craziness is that if you're willing to pay that much for all that security, why didn't you just give the original workers more money or more benefits or more accommodations or whatever?
Yeah, that's not commonsensical shit back. Come on. So on July 6th, a fight broke out between 300 of those guards and a crowd of the armed union workers. The shit lasted for 12 fucking hours. 7 guards and 9 strikers were eventually killed. At this point, the country is starting to hear about what's going on. Newspapers are picking it up. And that's when Emma and her man decided they needed to assassinate Frick. You know?
Okay.
This is when shit starts to get wild. So remember, let's just do a little recap. She's a Russian immigrant.
Yeah.
She's an anarchist. And now
well,
she wants
Jewish
to be,
anarchist.
Yes. And now she wants to be an assassin. Go, go, Emma. I got you, girl. Like, let's go.
Wow.
Why, you ask? Because they thought it would inspire workers to strike out against the capitalistic system around the country. So they were trying to influence people to do better by themselves and by killing somebody.
Sure, so, yeah, that makes sense.
Right? So the husband, or I'm sorry, so Berkman says, hey, we'll do this, you know, I got this, okay? I'm going to go down to Pittsburgh. I'm going to do the deed. You stay up here and you continue to do like associated propaganda, etc. So one of my favorite parts of this story is fast approaching. So while he was gone, she needed to make a little bit of money. And she had read a book called Crime and Punishment. She mused that the like heroine, I guess, in the book, she says she had become a prostitute in order to support her little brothers and sisters. Sensitive Sonia, sell her body. Why not I? So she decided to take up street life. And she
You're
went
still
out
married
on,
at this time?
I don't think they were actually married. I think that they were very much just, I don't know if they ever tied the knot because I didn't really see that. So, but yes, she certainly was. But her mindset was, we need money. I can do this. I can make it work. So this is a direct clip. Once on the street, Golden caught the eye of a man who took her into a saloon, bought her a beer, gave her $10. She did not have the knack and told her to quit the business.
Wow.
Listen, honey. You don't got it. Here's a beer and $10. That's a lot of money back then. She was so astounded. She just could not speak. She was rendered speechless. And so she wrote to her eldest sister, Helena, claiming illness, asking for $15.
Oh my God. That was a very short-lived street life.
Like the shortest lived. So on July 23rd, her man Berkman got access to Frick's office while carrying a hand. He ended up shooting the dude 3 times and stabbed him in the leg once. He ended
that
up
seems getting, unnecessary.
Right. Well, he didn't fucking die. He didn't die.
Oh my God. Really?
Yes. A group of workers, far from joining his little, you know, a tentat or whatever, his like mindset, whatever, they came and beat the shit out of Berkman, beat him unconscious. And then the cops came and like carried him away. And so then Berkman was convicted of attempted murder and sentenced to 22 years in prison.
I can't believe you shot him 3 times and he didn't die back in those days. Right. That's crazy. Because you'd expect that he to like at least die from blood loss or an infection or something, but
right, dysentery. I don't know. Who knows? I don't understand it either. But 22 years for attempted murder. So, at this point, police started after her, but they really couldn't find anything. So they tried to get her landlord to let her go, or what is it called? Evict her. And also, nobody supported what they did. Nobody in the radical groups, in the anarchist groups, like everybody was like, really, what the fuck, guys? And even her mentor, Most, condemned her actions basically publicly. So while he was up on stage one day, she ended up making her way with a toy horsewhip. And she ended up on stage. Wait, hang on. So she brought her horsewhip to a public lecture and demanded when she was on stage that he explained his betrayal to her. Like, he wasn't defending her actions. And he essentially condemned her again on stage. So, or he basically dismissed her. So she took out this toy horsewhip, hit him with it, broke it on her knee, and hurled the pieces at him.
God.
She's like, the drama. Fuck you. The drama. So she later says she regretted the assault, confiding to a friend at the 83. One does not reason. She's not wrong. She's not fucking wrong. So cut to 1894. So there was this thing called the Panic of 1893, and essentially the after effects in the United States was one of the worst economic crises that they had ever experienced. Now they're at like the highest rate of unemployment imaginable, 20%. There were hunger demonstrations that basically gave way to riots on occasion. And at one point, she started speaking to a crowd of men and women in New York. There was about 3,000 people in Union Square, where she encouraged the unemployed workers to essentially take everything by force. But that was definitely a super misinterpretation. So she says, well, then demonstrate before the palaces of the rich, demand work. If they do not give you work, demand bread. If they deny you both, take bread. That's what she claims she said at the end, like after everything was all said and done. But absolutely not. Nobody was okay with it. Essentially, she was incited a riot. So, or she didn't incite a riot. She basically was like encouraging people, and they thought she was trying to incite a riot. So later arrested when she was in Philly and returned to New York City for inciting to riot. And while she was on the train there with the cop, he said he'd reduce the charges if she started to like give up all of her rebel friends. And she was absolutely not interested in that at all. So she responded by tossing ice cold water in his face from a glass that she had in her hand. So while she was in custody, like detained or whatever, she was interviewed by a couple of people, and one of the reporters called her a modern Joan of Arc, but she was still sent to jail.
Well, yeah, because I mean, a journalist's opinion of somebody isn't going to change the sentencing.
No, certainly not. I think that even though she like had the positive publicity, the testimony that the like cop gave, and in fact the district attorney questioned her about her anarchism as well as how she was an atheist, and essentially the judge was like, you're just a dangerous woman. And so she was only sentenced to 1 year, but that's when she ended up having an attack of rheumatism, and she ended up making her way into infirmary, where she found a doctor friend, and she decided she was going to start studying medicine. So not only was she studying medicine, yes, okay, in Blackwell Island Penitentiary.
Okay.
So while she was in there, not only did she start studying medicine, but she was also reading books by American activists and novelists and poets and philosophers. And so she was released after only 10 months. She didn't even have to serve a full year, which is just 2 months shy, but still. When she was released, there was a crowd of nearly 3,000 people that greeted her at the Thalia Theater in New York City. And after that, she soon became swamped with requests for interviews and lectures. So like, okay, girl, you finally got some positive publicity out of it. You don't have to pretend like you're going to go ahead and be a sex worker in the streets.
Or assassin people. Yeah.
That too. So he wanted to make money, and she decided that she wanted to continue the medical studies that she had started when she was locked up, but she wanted to go into midwifery and massage, which were not options in the US. So what does she do? Quickly sails over to fucking Europe to attend lectures in London, Glasgow, Edinburgh. That's where she also met renowned anarchists that were from the European era, or from the European side, Errico Malatesta, Louis Michel, and Peter Kropotkin. Yeah. And eventually in Vienna, this is what she received her 2 diplomas for midwifery, but she went immediately back to the US to put them to use. So
again, these women and this trend of at some point they end up in Europe.
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay, so we're approaching the last.
Yes.
Yeah, but also like all the time it takes to sail over there, do the lecturing, learn everything, and be like, okay, I'm gonna go back now. Like, it's just so much picking up and leaving. Like, I feel there's no foundation for any of these people. Like, I'd miss my cats. Shit. Okay.
And so, it's interesting that she wanted to go into midwifery, but it doesn't sound like she had children.
No. Not that I saw, but she didn't get married till later. So she went from being in jail and having these, having nothing, to all of a sudden being famous. People are asking her to do lectures. people are asking her to perform midwifery duties on them. She was actually the first cross-country tour by an anarchist speaker in the United States. Then she ended up going back to Europe in November of 1899 to speak more. This is where she met another Czech anarchist in London. And that's where they went then to France to help organize the anarchist congress that hung out like on the outskirts of Paris.
Wow. You know what's interesting is that she doesn't believe in religion, but she believes very hard in not believing,
believing
in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like she has such a strong sense of belief. It's just in choosing to not believe in it. Like it's so weird. Like,
yeah.
And I don't know. I just feel like I'm not very religious. I don't practice any type of religion by any means, but I'm also not an anarchist. Like, I'm not like,
I guess the definition is
passionate.
Right. But I also feel like, could be a possibility the definition of anarchist back then was a little bit light compared to what it is now.
Okay. But I'm like, man, she really chose to dive into not believing.
And she also, don't forget, was a proponent of nonviolent authority, but she continued to justify an axe. We'll get into it. So she ended up going back to the States and moved to Chicago after the guy from the Czech anarchist came and immigrated from London. So they ended up moving to Chicago, where they shared a place with a bunch of her friends. Okay, so next section and our last section for this episode. There's so much more. Okay, so on September 6, 1901, a guy named Leon Szigla, I can't say his name. I'm fucking bad at it. His name is Leon C, and he was an unemployed factory worker and an anarchist. He ended up shooting President William McKinley twice during a public speaking event in Buffalo, New York. He died 8 days later. Of course, Leon was immediately arrested, interrogated around the clock. When he was being interrogated, he claimed to be an anarchist and said he essentially was inspired to act after going and attending one of the speeches that Goldman gave. So immediately they were like, fuck yeah, we got her again. So they went and used that as pretext to charge her with helping to plan McKinley's murder or assassination. They found her, remember, Buffalo, New York. They found her in Chicago, where she shared that place. And she ended up getting arrested with 10 other fucking people. So they're like, oop, little rat's nest, let's get you all.
Imagine just out of nowhere, you're arrested and you're like, for what? And then they're like, oh, assassinating the president. And she's like, what?
Yes. Yes. Hang on. Who? That's cute. So, earlier, before Leon did what he did, it turns out he definitely tried to become friends with her and the rebels when she was in Cleveland. And he was asking her advice on books that he should read. In July of 1901, he appeared at a place that like one of the rebels' houses, and he was asking a bunch of really weird questions, and they kind of like assumed that he was like an undercover cop or like somebody trying to spy on. So they basically remained really distant from him, and essentially said, this dude's a spy, don't give him time of day. So Leon would repeatedly deny the fact that she was involved, and although he denied it, there was no real evidence of it. She was detained for this time for, like, I think about 2 weeks. Then they finally recognized that none of them trusted him as an insider, so they all got let go. And due to her having her midwifery certificate, she also offered to nurse the president back to health. Because he was, after all,
died 8 days later.
A human being. He did. So I have to imagine it was like they found her, got her within a day or two, and she was like, hey, wait a minute, I'll help. And they're like, no, bitch, shut the fuck up. And they detained her. He passed away while she was still being detained. So although Leon was, it was obvious that he had like a lot of mental illnesses, issues going on, he was convicted of murder and executed. So although she was not involved, thought he was kind of a weirdo, she did feel bad for him because of his mental illnesses, and she refused to condemn him for his actions. She stood vigilant and alone in this. Friends, people that supported her, including her man, was like, you need to stop, this is insanity. And she was like, he's a super sensitive being. And she basically chastised the groups for abandoning him. She even was vilified in the press as the high priestess of anarchy.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
So many newspapers definitely said the anarchist movement was responsible for the murder. And in the wake of these events, socialism gained more support over anarchism in the U.S. radical movement. It's insane to me.
Wow.
So
the amount of power that she had.
Honestly, like, she changed the direction of the political course by just existing? Chilling, yeah, speaking her mind, speaking her truth. So then Theodore Roosevelt, we all know him, he came into office and he declared his intent to crack down not only on against anarchists but against all active and passive sympathizers with anarchists. And that's where we're going to leave it for today, because the next chapter is wild.
Wowee.
But we'll leave it with, after he was executed, after Leon was executed, she actually decided to become very seclusive. And from 1903 to 1913, she lived in New York City and essentially, like, retreated to anonymity and nursing. So she stopped being Emma Goldman and she just became a nurse. And so that's where we're at. We'll come back next week.
Okay. Wowee.
Yeah, there's like more murder, more social justice that includes, like, you know, birth control, women's rights. She had something to do with World War I.
Fuck's sake. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, yeah, wow, wow.
So yeah, this first section was, I feel like, was really to lay the foundation of the rest of her life.
My gosh. That's insane. I mean, how old is she at this point? Do you know?
Well, if she was born in 1869, and it was 1903, 69, 79, 89, 99. At this point, she was like 40 some change. She was not done. Absolutely not fucking done. She was going until 1940. She did not stop.
She may have slowed down a little bit, but your girl didn't stop.
Wow. That's a pretty action-packed 4 decades.
Right. And don't forget, she was an Orthodox Jew.
So right.
World War One madness.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for doing the deep dive and giving us all of the information. I mean, so much so that we have to do a two-parter.
Yeah. Well, I figured, first and foremost, she deserved it. But second of all, the fact that she had a biography and she was able to go back and comment on all of these things, I thought it was just great to include it all.
Oh, man. Emma, goodness gracious.
I know. Poor Seth. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm writing my book report. Leave me alone. He's like, okay. And then I tell him about all these crazy things, and he's like, that's wild. That's all he's got for me. I'm like, I know. I can't wait to tell Nicole. Little things.
It is. It's a bit head spinning. Mm-hmm. Oh man. Okay. Well, thanks for covering her, and I can't wait to hear the rest.
Good Lord. I can't wait to tell everybody. I know. It's just as action packed. Truly.
So I guess that means it's attagirl time, which attagirls are where we pat ourselves on the back for something good that we've done or something good that's happened to us.
And, I can't stop laughing at you two right now.
At me and Sir William?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you know. He likes to cuddle when it's on his choosing. Like, he has to be the one to initiate.
Oh, yeah.
It can't be because I want to. So
no, he's a cat.
He's like scratching at me. So I'm like, okay, I'll take the cuddle time.
Hilarious. You
know, it doesn't happen that often. It's got to be on his terms.
Yeah, I get it. Same way. Fuck.
So my attagirl is that I finally made it to Napa. It was a trip that was planned in 2020 that got canceled because it was going to be in May of 2020. And obviously the world shut down in March. And after trying to get the same group of people, because at that time we actually had, I don't know, 5 or 6 of us, I think, who were going to go. So then I tried to get a big group again to go, and people just kept falling off. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm still doing it. So yeah. Carmen and I went to Napa and drank our weight in wine, and it was a great time.
And now we're back to real life. Soggy.
Well, I'm kind of back. I mean, I'm a little out of it, a little jet lagged in the overnight flight where I didn't sleep. I'm like,
right.
Man, I can really feel that I'm getting older.
Well, I mean, also,
bounce back.
Yeah, add a girl for having an overnight flight and still being alive right now. I would have canceled. Like, we're not doing it this week. Sorry.
I thought about it.
So y'all are lucky she didn't.
Right. No, I mean, if I would have had to... given the story, then I probably would have had to cancel, but I assumed you had already done the work and everything, and I just had to listen. So
yeah, which is fair, because I do that to you sometimes.
I mean, it wasn't strategic on my part. It just happened to work out that way that I did it last week and it was your turn this week. So
yep, here we are.
After you did the work, I wasn't gonna cancel and be like, just kidding.
Perfect. So I had a girl planted my garden. I got my garden in the ground.
Oh my god. I feel like this is the everlasting attagirl. Like I hear about the garden every week.
there's a lot of stages involved. Let me tell you how we went to a horse farm in Linden, Michigan, middle of nowhere, and collected so many bags of compost, dirt, topsoil, free. Of course, we put in the work, did the labor, gas, whatever. Well, Seth, 2 days in a row, was hauling dirt back and forth, emptying them into the buckets. And then finally last night we got them both full and I started planting my plants and I'm very excited. So yeah, it was a lot of work. I'm proud of me and him and us. I just gotta make sure it's like animal proof so that the animals don't eat all my shit.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta chicken wire that.
We've got a bunny who likes to hang. He's actually a jack.
Oh, you don't have it up?
No, no. I just blocked everything on the, we don't have it up yet because they're not big enough to be eaten. They've been outside for like a couple of weeks now and nobody's touched them. So it's when they get flowers on them.
You didn't have like the raised garden.
Oh, I do. We do.
So how did the bunnies get into the raised garden?
I'm thinking raccoons.
Get little... these bunnies that like to hang out. I'm like, well, the bunnies can only get it if you plant it in the ground.
No, but we have chipmunks and shit too. Not like it's gonna help with,
well, sure, like squirrels and chipmunks and stuff, but that one confused me because I was like, I swear you said you were putting them in a raised garden. I'm like, do you have like superpower bunnies?
Yes, they're jackrabbits.
They have springs for legs.
Yeah, they don't go under the, they go over it. It's kind of terrifying. Could you imagine if bunnies, instead of burrowing under fences, were like, I'm just gonna leap like Superman,
right? Oh man,
there is a squirrel though that is very territorial and also massively huge and taunts the dogs on purpose. We'll sit and chatter at them, throw things at them. It's kind of entertaining.
Funny. That is funny. I know the squirrels in the city always barked at Gia. That's what I call their chatter. It's like, I was like, the squirrels are barking.
I think that's what, yeah, that's accurate. That's an appropriate statement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well,
thank you again. Yeah. If you guys liked what you heard today, please rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends about it. And you can request a Hoe of History by emailing us at homancepodcast@gmail.com or sending us a DM on Instagram at homance_chronicles. We have Homance merch available in my Etsy store, etsy.com/shop/NicoleBonneville. And you could also join a closed group on Facebook. It has nothing to do with these women that we're talking about, but
no, it's our legacy humor.
It's connected to our older episodes about dating and sex and relationships. And so that's on Facebook, the Homance Chronicles, Judgment Free Zone. And you just have to request to be part of that closed group. So with that, to be continued.
Oh, yeah.
Dot, dot, dot.
Now Homance out.